Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. Come explore news, information, entertainment, and ideas from a pagan point of view around the globe. Tune in every night for interviews and lively discussions on current events, philosophies, traditional and not-so-traditional practices, DIY projects, the who's who and what's what of our growing pagan community right here on Blog Talk Radio in English and now in Spanish.
Welcome to Pagan Warrior Radio, supporting the warriors who serve, honoring the warrior within. Join David and Jeanette Ewing and Pam Kelly on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Central for talk, news, ideas, music, and ceremonial encounters. Create community with military pagans across the USA and around the world. Tune in, call in, join live chat on the Pagans Tonight Network. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Download free podcasts to listen and share. Pagan Warrior Radio is sponsored by Circle Sanctuary, providing education, rituals, publications, festivals, and more for pagans worldwide. Find us on the web at www.circlesanctuary.org.
Good evening. Welcome to Pagan Warrior Radio. On speakerphone. Can you hear me, David?
I think you're on. It sounds like you're on a speaker or something there. A little faint all of a sudden. How you doing?
Yeah, well, I was on the handset because I don't like doing phone. I was on the handset and it kept on. So I guess I'm going to have a speakerphone tonight. I'm doing fine. How are you?
Okay. Yeah, still cutting out here and there. Yeah, we're doing good. We're breathing some relief here in Virginia. We had our governor's election yesterday, and there's been a change. So we're hoping this is going to be a good thing.
Ah, I heard about that.
It was pretty close. There for a point, there was a moment now. Okay, so like 85% of the precincts had reported in, or 87% had reported in. And at one point, it was, at that point, it was like a 400-vote race. I mean, they both had like 600,000 or 700,000 some odd votes, and it was like a 400 vote, difference at one point. And then it switched around. So that was the interesting thing here. So we'll see how Virginia, this is the first time in I think it's like 50 years or something that Virginia has elected a governor that is of the same party as the president. Usually Virginia's governor is, for whatever reason, is opposite from the White House. So, yeah. I know there were some others, too. I know Christie got reelected in New Jersey. Oh, and another thing here in Virginia is we have our Fairfax County has its first woman sheriff was elected in. So that's that was kind of a significant thing.
Very cool. Constitutional amendments, propositions, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't really offices. I did vote. I voted because the right thing. I voted because crazy voting regulations play that, even the because of all the hoops that they've ironic about it is one of the things that they did is if your driver's license or your identification exact same name as on your voter registration vote, that was if it's I'm a Pamela I have Pam on my voter registration on my card, on my
ballot. Right.
That's something.
Yeah, so I heard about that. Yeah, they have to be exactly the same name on your ID and your voter registration. And the middle name has to be exactly the same, and everything has to be, like, exactly the same thing. I know in Virginia, I think for the next round of elections, we're going to have – they voted in the last – this past state assembly passed a voter ID rule that is going to require, you know, a photo identification here. And things that we used to be able to use as identification won't be allowed anymore either. Like, you could show up with, like, a utility bill or your Social Security card or something that says, yep, this is who I am. And now it's got to have to, it's going to have to be a photo ID with the next round of elections here. So, yeah.
Well, here's the funny thing. Now is okay. Our hopefully soon or next governor, Wendy Davis. Woohoo! You can tell who I'm going for. Wendy Davis put in an amendment to the voter registration that you can sign an affidavit. So an affidavit, if you're, say you're, it's a married name or a hyphenated name, you can sign
right.
an affidavit saying, yeah, this is really me. And
yeah.
if she hadn't have passed, because of her name, if she hadn't have passed that, then Rick Perry's hopeful, you know, the guy that wants to take Rick Perry's place, the guy who says his, the Attorney General of Texas who says his job, I didn't see this in the Texas Constitution as being his job description, but he feels
mm-hmm.
his job description is waking up every morning to sue Obama. So if
oh.
it weren't for what Wendy Davis had done, Greg Abbott couldn't have voted because one of his identifications says Greg Abbott and the other one says Gregory W. Abbott.
Oh.
W, sorry, we're in Texas, W.
W, yeah.
So he wouldn't have been able to vote. So I don't think he foresaw that. I did. I went and made sure that I could. Well, I went and made sure. And we're making sure. I attended a day-long training on Saturday to help get the vote out. And, you know, ideally I want people to vote for who I want. But I'm pretty nonpartisan about making sure people vote because, you know, come on, people. This is America, and this is why, you know, it. You can say directly or indirectly, this is why this show exists. This is why we're here. If you're in the military, you're fighting for these rights, and this is, like, the most important right, in my opinion, that Americans
mm-hmm.
have, is to vote. So you need to vote. You need – okay, soapbox gone. Sorry.
Oh, I'm there with you.
As you can tell, I'm passionate.
Oh, yeah, and I think a lot of folks who are in the military would back that up with, you know, yeah, that's one of the things that people have fought for and died for this country is, you know, fighting for the founding of this nation and everything else is the right to vote. And, you know, that the people have, you know, pushed and they were, you know, and gone through all kinds of hardship to fight for the right for women to vote, and then the right for blacks to vote. I mean, you know, it's not just something that, like, oh yeah, that has been easily won.
Right, it's
and you know, so it
place.
Really, I think, yeah, I'm there on the soapbox with you too. That, you know, people need to do that. You know, there's enough has been done.
It.
Oh, cool.
I'll tell you the reason why, and for people who don't quite believe in it. Here's another reason why it's important for everyone who is a citizen of this country to vote.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you don't vote, even if you are on the fence about something, what has happened in this country with so many people not voting is that you have significant schism, politically speaking, in the country. What you don't have are the people who are middle of the road and people who may... And I'm going to just use this as an example, who may actually identify as being either conservative Democrat or less conservative Republican, what you would have called a Goldwater Republican,
mm-hmm.
someone who's fiscally conservative. And those people represent statistically the middle percentage of the country, politically speaking. And it is those people who are not rabid in one direction or the other who are not voting, who have never voted, because they don't believe their vote counts. And so if you had more people voting, you would see much more of a normalization of the electoral process in the country, especially when it comes to voting in primary elections. If you had people in voting in primary elections that never vote, you would have definitely a much more normalized system party-wise, where you have less extremists on both sides. And so regardless of what your actual political beliefs are, that's why it's actually important for everyone who can vote to vote, because a large percentage of the problem with extremism within the parties has to do with the fact that, especially within the Republican Party, the people who have the loudest voices are the ones that are actually voting. And the ones who are not, the ones who are not will not vote for those extremists because they don't believe in those extremists when their beliefs are something that are much more centrist. And as long as the extremists are being voted into the House and Senate, you're going to have these problems.
Well, for example, in Virginia, there are, I'm looking at a news article here that says that there are approximately 5.2 million voters registered and eligible to vote in Virginia, but only, 2.1 million people voted. So, you know, here's the thing. So the state of Virginia is, obviously, it's a lot more than 5 million people, but only 5 million people are registered and eligible to vote. And if only half of those people who are eligible to vote, and the election is won by, you know, 52%, by somebody getting 52% of the vote, they got 52% of those who did vote, and only half of those who were eligible actually voted. So you're talking really, you know, like in our case in Virginia, the governor was elected less than, you know, roughly a quarter of those who were eligible to vote voted for the guy.
Right.
And he still won because, you know, the other guy got just under a quarter of everybody who voted for the other guy. So, you know, it's such a it becomes, you know, representative of a minority of people instead of representative of the majority. And this is a fairly high turnout for this, for an off cycle election.
Actually, it is, which when I looked at the numbers, I thought it was crap. I thought that the turnout was crap until I read further down in the article and said, this is the second highest turnout in, you know, in a gubernatorial election, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I'm like, really? That sucks.
Yeah.
That's really
sucks.
Well, and here, Texas is a prime example. We, like I said, I did training over the weekend, and Texas is 50th in the United States for voter turnout. And people people think that, you know, part of the reason that we keep getting, you know, the crazies that want to wake up every morning and sue Obama as their job title or their job description, people think that there's no way we can get rid of them because the state is so red.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again,
then,
trying to keep the partisan out of it.
Yeah.
People are not voting. Exactly what you're saying, Jeanette. If people came out
what is the population of Texas? It's over 20 million. It's way bigger than Virginia, obviously. I want to say over 25 million people live in the state of Texas. Maybe that's an overestimation. I don't think so.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but it's one of the big voting block states.
It is, and that's one of the things that we talked about on our thing. Again, I'm not trying to be partisan, but I'm just, like, putting it out there that if Texas was blue, then there would be – we would own the White House because of how big Texas is with voting. One of the big humps that that everyone has to overcome is Texas. And Texas was a blue state at one point. I mean, LBJ, the whole war on poverty, that he's a Democrat.
Right.
You know, so... Right. So, well, I don't want to get... We're, like, way getting into the discussion on the politics. But the bottom line is why we're here as you know, Pagan Warrior Radio is that as people in the military or people associated with the military, that's one of the things that we defend is the right, you know, the one of the most basic American rights is voting. And I'm going to kind of segue this here a little bit.
Yeah, we need
to kind of
shift into what we're here for.
Yeah. By the way, real quick Texas thing is if you need to be registered to vote in Texas, contact me because I am a deputy and can register or help you with registering to vote. Okay, off
oh,
the
cool.
soapbox for Texas. But one of the things that, you know, the reason I put that out there, too, is one of the things that's really difficult for the military, we're moving around all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're moving around all the time, it's hard to, you know, stay in touch with your where your place, your home of residence is, your home of record is. And vote and such like that. So that's one of the hurdles that you have with the military when you move around a lot. One of the other things is, you know, it's nice to go and meet new people and go to new places and experience new things, but it's kind of tough during the holidays. So one of the other things is you have to learn, you have to establish new holiday traditions. You have to try to get that connection, and it's tough. It's tough. It doesn't matter if you're pagan. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, LDS. It doesn't matter what your faith is, even if you're agnostic. When you're overseas during the holiday season, it's really tough. And one of the things that a lot of people want to do is to help out military members and their families who are overseas. I'm seeing it spread all around Facebook already, people posting how you send holiday cards to soldiers
mm-hmm.
and such. And people, some people know, some people may not know about Operation Circle Care, and I'm really excited that it's part of what Circle Sanctuary does, and I'm so excited to be working with you two because that's your baby. So I'm going to go ahead and hush now, and I segued us out of the voting into the Operation Circle Care, so you guys can go
well,
on. And,
I mean, it is a good segue, and I'll tell you why. And let's see, in 1994, 95, David was on deployment. He was on the USS Essex, and they had their big Pacific, what do you call it?
Westpac.
So quickly do we forget. So it was a big Pacific deployment. You go to various countries and stuff. When was it? Well, it was from September to May. So it went over. It crossed over, let's see, Halloween or Samhain and Thanksgiving and Christmas, David's birthday. So all of these important holidays were during this time David was deployed. Now, we were just first starting out with our paganism. And so when you are deployed anywhere, you can only bring so much tchotchke of your own personal stuff with you. You're very limited. And so there were a number of things I sent David. And some of those things that got sent were, in fact, books, but it became a really important thing just to send those things from home. There was a particular toothpaste that he liked, deodorant, soap, could not get at the little teeny tiny ship's store. So I was always sending that kind of stuff.
Right, because, you know, you have your own brand. I mean yeah, because some people, you know, there's the brand that you're used to, and, you know, you couldn't get it on the ship because they didn't carry it.
Right. So it was that sort of thing. There were other lots of food items and snacks and stuff like that. So why is Operation Circle Care important? When you are a minority religion, so you're deployed somewhere, you can't take a lot of stuff with you, including spiritual stuff. There might be a handful of things you can manage to pack in, but the reason why you can't is because you don't have space. So it becomes important for people here, back home, to send stuff to them. And if you are a solitary practitioner, especially if you're a solitary practitioner, well, then you're kind of spiritually adrift. You know, you don't have the stuff, you don't have anything that reminds you of spirit. You don't have, you might have a piece of jewelry, you might have one or two other really small things. You probably don't have anything to do divination with. You don't have any stones for protection or other stones that, you know, represent the elements, or other little things that represent the elements. You don't have any decent paying books to read, then you can take them with you. So this is why this was developed, because somebody figured out that there was a significant need for people to be able to have their spiritual stuff with them. And, I mean, it is worth noting that that's the majority of what we've seen, but increasingly over the years, we have mentioned, and people have responded really well, with also adding other things in there, too, that people like. So, but that was, you know, when you think about it from that perspective, then it becomes, then you can think about it like, oh, yeah, I have all my tchotchke with me. I can, you know, I have tarot cards, I've got little stones, you know, I have books on stuff. But what if you couldn't bring any of that with you? What if you were going to go somewhere where you were by yourself, you didn't know if there was anybody who believed what you believed. They're probably within your own unit, there probably wasn't, and you didn't have any of that. So, you know, Yuletide, that general larger Yuletide season becomes, you know, a really cool time to get that stuff out to people.
Right. And another limitation, too, is that folks, you know, when you're deploying overseas, you can only take so much with you anyway. You know, in your duffel bag, sea bag, whatever you want to call it, and stuff, your luggage that you carry, and the guys and gals who deploy and stuff, they can only carry so much. So that kind of comes down to, you know, so the other things that they would, you know, be nice to have to be sent. So it's kind of why we came up with why this. Well, we didn't come up with the program, but why we really feel like it's something worth doing. You know, we've met plenty of people who have received the packages, and we've gotten some pretty positive feedback from folks on that, which is great. So,
it's really weird. We met somebody who just last year was, he's Navy. He was deployed on a ship, I don't remember the ship, wherever it was, overseas, when the ship's deployed, it's not a ship by itself, it's a part of a larger battle group. So it was like a good half a dozen or more ships. So this guy happened, you know, he finishes his tour on that ship. His next duty station is here in D.C. metro area. And he meets up with us at Northern Virginia Pagan Pride. I mean, talk about a small freaking world.
Right.
But it is cool, you know. And you really see whenever you're lucky enough to meet people who receive the packages, I mean, there's just so much gratitude that comes from these people to know that they're not alone and to know that there is, you know, there's connection and they have ways to be able to connect to their spirituality. And as an aside to that, it's sort of related, is that there are some people who go on deployment who maybe they're just not that close to their families, or their families are not the type that send them gifts or whatever, but David knew lots of guys who didn't get anything from their family, which I grew up in the Navy. My dad was in the Navy, so this was part of our lives, the whole world of deployment. And I grew up with us sending packages to my dad whenever the ship was deployed on the big 6-month deployment. I mean, it was just a regular part of my childhood. I remember sending all kinds of stuff. And again, the toiletries, the personal care items, cookies and beef jerky. And my dad makes kick-ass beef jerky. And he made some, this was something, I don't know, like what, 10 years ago. No, almost 10 years ago. And no, it was almost 20 years ago. Oh, we're old, baby.
Right.
Damn, that was a long time ago. So my dad has this recipe for beef jerky, and he made a bunch of beef jerky and sent it to David when David was deployed. And they sent him, my parents also sent him care packages. They sent him cookies and all kinds of stuff. But, yeah, I mean, we did that all the time growing up. So it became, you know, a big thing. So you just, I remember you telling me a few different times about how you got stuff all the time from me or my parents.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was, you know, every time we'd have a mail call, I would get a letter or, you know, a package or something, just pretty much just about every time we had mail delivered on the ship when we were on our deployment. You know, and I know there were lots of guys who didn't get hardly anything in the way of mail from their family and, you know, packages and stuff. And it was really, you know, so I never really that was something that I kind of felt bad for them, you know, that they didn't get as much mail and stuff. I they kind of gave me a hard time because, you know, well, yeah, Ewing's got a letter again. You know, hey, yep, surprise. you know, and kind of made a thing of it in the shop. So, you know, the folks that are, you know, so we do, you know, the purpose of Operation Circle Care is to try to share that, you know, with our pagan troops that are stationed overseas, whether they're on deployment or PCS, you know, on a long-term, you know, duty station. And we've definitely sent folks, sent packages to folks in, like, Japan and Germany and, you know, places where folks are PCS. Have PCS too, and other places, you know, like the Middle East and on various ships and other places where they might just be there for, you know, a deployment of however
right.
long, you know, 6 to 9 to 12 months, whatever it's going to be.
And, yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what it's about. So, you know, sending that out to let folks know that, hey, you know, we're folks are thinking about you. You know, not just us, you know, Jeanette and I here thinking about you, but the folks who donated everything, and people are really nice about donating stuff. You know, we were up at South Jersey Pagan Pride Day this past October, and they usually do a pretty good job up there of getting the word out and getting a lot of stuff, a lot of donations collected. So we were able to be there, and people were tracking us down, like, oh, say, well, where do you go to donate for the troops? Where can you go to donate for the troops? It's like, oh, yeah. You know, and you'd see people like, okay, well, what do you need? And they'd ask us what we, you know, what we're looking for and stuff. And we'd kind of give them a little rundown, a discussion. And then they go disappear for an hour or two, and they come back with, oh, well, I bought these things, you know, at one of the vendors there at Pagan Pride. And, oh, here you go. Here's some wands or some jewelry or some things or whatever, some divination stuff or, you know. And that was, I mean, folks would come to the Pagan Pride Day, track us down to where the donations were being collected, and then go shopping. And come
right.
back with
That's cool.
something to put in the bin. So,
yeah,
you know,
so,
there's a lot of really good intent and a lot of things that are handmade, a lot of stuff that's handmade. So, you know, that's something else that I kind of harp on is that the magic of the handmade item, you know, when
right.
we... When
so,
you, yeah.
Yeah, if you're a person who doesn't have a lot of money and you want to donate something, items, things to donate, do you do stuff with clay? Can you, or sculpt? Do you have, you know, are you creative at all? If you're a creative person, well, there's all kinds of things you can do. You can make little god and goddess figurines. And I'm not a naturally, you know, sculptorific person. So what I've done, I've done a lot of stuff with Sculpey. You buy it on sale, you know, and I've got some stamps that I bought, some different little molds, little Sculpey molds that I bought a long time ago, and I've got little goddess things and a green man thing and some
mm-hmm.
Celtic symbol things, and I'll just sit down for an afternoon and make a whole bunch of sculpting, stubborn sculpting, bake it, and there you go. I've just now got, you know, 2 dozen Goddess figurines that I just made up. Now, if you're that artistic, where you can make a decent-looking Goddess figurine, that's okay, too. But that's just one example. And, you know, you can buy Sculpey on sale cheap a lot of places. If you're a person who is got, if you live in an area where there's, you know, trees, a lot of fallen branches, maybe you can make some really simple wands. If you're in an area that's got trees, cut some simple wooden discs and put a symbol on it. Draw pentacles, paint them, put different symbols. One of the things that's really cool also is making simply designed amulets and talismans. And you can look at any number of different books for different kinds of symbols that are great for prosperity, for protection, maybe for purification, success, any number of different things like that. And so those handmade things can be really simple and easy to do and very meaningful. Another real cheap thing you can do is with, take river rocks, you know, flattened rocks, you know, paint or draw a symbol out on them, spray paint them with, you know, the ever-present, you know, popular, I call it pagan spray, you know, with the sparkly spray. Because, you know, I don't know of any pagan that doesn't like glitter. So now you have something with a symbol on it.
There you go.
And you spray paint some glitter on it. And there you go. Now you got Tate and Chachki. So those are kinds of things. Those are really simple handmade things, very inexpensive, and that can be very meaningful for people. Another thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, we talk about people being deployed. And, you know, during the early years of Operation Circle Care, the big push was to get things sent to people who were in war zones in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and slightly lesser extent, you know, the UAE and the UAE
Kuwait,
right next,
and that area.
Kuwait.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, the focus of our military has changed, but that doesn't mean that people still don't get stationed overseas. People get stationed overseas in faraway places like Italy and Japan. People get stationed in Kuwait. Germany. So, you know, it's not likely that they have, you know, the local pagan store to buy supplies and books and stuff. So if somebody's stuck over there for a year or more, you know, they are also kind of left adrift, spiritually speaking, especially if they don't have family or community back here of their same spiritual belief system.
Mm-hmm.
So those become
right.
Some really good examples of things. So some of the places that people have, that we've sent items to are, let's see, we mentioned Japan. We've sent things to South Korea. We've sent some to Germany. Where else have we sent them to?
We had somebody that was in Djibouti. We've sent to Japan, South Korea, Germany, Djibouti, Kuwait, Iraq, Afghanistan. Where else was this? You know, guys on the ships that were on deployment somewhere in the Pacific, or Indian Ocean, or someplace in an ocean. Germany, Italy. Yeah. That's quite a bit.
Yeah. So, you know, we do send to ships that are currently deployed, and you know, there's a number of those, and we've also sent two over the years. And one thing we have not previously mentioned is group leaders. So one of the things that Circle Sanctuary and a few other organizations do that are sponsoring organizations is they have an active duty person, not always active duty, but most of the time, who will become the lay leader, the spiritual lay leader at a particular duty location. And it can be a place where people rotate in and out fairly often, like someplace where it's a shorter-term deployment, or it can be like a larger military thing. And so these people are referred to as DFGLs, or in the Navy, as they call lay leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
In the Air Force, we've just recently been changed to non-chaplain worship leaders.
Non-chaplain.
Worship leaders. We are the non-chaplain.
DFGLs.
Yeah,
right.
Everyone knows this.
We have DFGLs, we have ladies,
lay leaders. Well, everyone pretty much still knows this as DFGLs. So, I'm a DFGL. But yeah, you're right. Whenever you go overseas, it's because the deployments are shorter, than a stateside assignment. You have a rotation with DFGLs.
Mm-hmm. Right, and so one of the things that I wanted to get the word out about also is that if you are a DFGL or you know a DFGL that is stationed anywhere overseas. Make sure you pass them along our information so that they can be the ones to send the names of people in their group. And also, if you you don't even know who's in the group, but you know the DFGL and you have their address, drop us a line, too, and get that information to us so that, if nothing else, we know they have a group. We may not know how many people are in the group, so... At the very least, we can get group supplies and add in some individual supplies, too. So some of the things that we'll do that are a little bit different for the group leaders versus the individuals would be things like incense, because unless you're in an unusual situation where you're maybe someplace like Japan or Germany where you can go somewhere out in the woods or you manage to be able to have a designated area if you're living in a home and not the barracks or anything. Most of these times, if it's one of those situations, well, you can't have candles in your barracks room and you cannot have incense in your barracks room, so we substitute with different things. If you're a group leader, though, you have typically access to an area, a worship area, either indoors or outdoors, and so you can burn incense and you can have candles. So many times for the people who donated those types of things, we send those to the group leaders because we're reasonably certain that those people can actually burn things, have candles and things like that. So, but that's, an example of some of the types of things that we have that might be a little bit different. Things like larger altar cloths. Maybe some of the larger tchotchke that we get that might be good for altars, candle holders, and stuff like that, too, we've also sent in the group boxes. And of course, we can't talk about this without talking about, the Circle magazine. So we always put in at least one, usually more than one, Circle magazine to every individual box as well as the group boxes. So they definitely get a full array of items. Definitely, a lot of them are spiritual of a variety of different kinds. And then we also have things like the personal care items, like we previously mentioned.
Yeah, and we usually try to throw some candy and snacks and stuff in there too. To fill the box up and have some of that too, because I was hearing about like when the sequester started last year, when they were doing all that stuff, there were folks out in the field who were on deployment stuff who actually had a meal cut, so they were only getting like two meals a day. So having granola bars, you know, was great because then they, you know, that gave them something to eat on during the course of the day between meals. You know, and that's something I remember too from my days on the on the ship. Is there were times where you might not have had a chance to go down to get something to eat when the meal was happening, or it was like there were times where it was you'd rather eat your shoe than what they were serving. So you know, having a stock of granola bars or you know Pop Tarts and stuff was very helpful.
Those items that are less perishable, things that are usually the grain-based items, granolas, those oats. Did I also send you a lot of those cheese and cracker things?
Yeah. Packages of cheese and crackers? Oh, yeah.
Now the latest I've seen. They came out with this a few years ago. There's two different things. One of them is the cheesy goo with the little, like, pretzel stick type thingy. And they have something similar to that that's got a little travel pack thingy with a little bit of Nutella and some little breadstick-looking things. Snacks like that are always good.
My best friend Franny when she was in Afghanistan, I think I made her the most popular person around because I sent her pouches of the tuna fish. Foil packed pouches of tuna fish. I sent her a bunch of those, and I also sent her, a lot of people don't think about this, and if you're old military, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, but I also sent her a P-38.
Oh, yeah. A little can opener.
The little can opener that they used to have in the sea rats all the time, but then they took them out because you had the MREs.
Right. It's all in a plastic pouch.
Yeah,
right,
and, and sometimes your choices are just crappy, and sometimes you don't have time to, and sometimes you just want to eat a snack in your rack rather than go eat, something undistinguishable and some sort of gravy again. I've heard stories.
Oh yeah.
You know,
so like
when you're first deployed, you get the good stuff, and then as time goes on, they move to the
less and less. Yeah, it was until you get a replenishment. I remember one time on one of my ships, we had Moroccan beef stew for lunch. And then at dinner, they served Tunisian beef stew. And then at midnight on the ships, we'd have four meals. They'd have a meal in the middle of the night for the guys who had night watch, because just people working 24 hours a day. So for the midnight meal, it was like, then it was just called beef stew. And they had a lot of it still. And because it was one of those things that if the salad bar was any good, you'd have the salad bar, but in that case it wasn't. So having, like, Pop-Tarts and granola bars and snacks and crackers
and
things were really useful.
Salad is supposed to be green, not brown.
Yeah. I remember the times where we'd be on the submarine repair ship and we'd have the fresh produce come on the ship, and you'd see the fresh produce come on the ship, go across the ship and go down into the subs. And then you go to lunch and the lettuce is wilted and brownish, and it's like, I just saw new lettuce, come on. Oh yeah, I went to the subs. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, because they feel bad for them and for their,
Well, and they deserved it, but it was kind of depressing. Thankfully, ketchup covers a lot.
Funny.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So, yeah, I like that little P-38 idea. I've seen some things online where you can still get them in bulk. They're not that expensive still. You can get a bunch of them, and maybe we should look into getting a bunch sending them out.
We have a surplus store here, one of those Army, Navy surplus stores, or a lot of camping places still have them. And the P-38s are really handy. In fact, I need to go get another one. I almost always carry one. So, and I showed one to my ex-father-in-law. I said, look what I have. And he's like, oh, yes, that's a P-38. And then he pocketed it. I'm like, I was just showing it to you, dude. So, but going back to the Operation Circle Care, you basically, you're kind of like the clearinghouse. People send stuff to you if they want to send stuff. You have a lot of stuff, though, right? Is what you need now more people asking for it? Is that what the drive is now?
Oh, so, yeah, we definitely need addresses, names and addresses of people to send stuff to. We do have a lot of stuff, you know, and we can always use more, especially things like divination items, pagan jewelry, ritual items. Are great ideas. And if you don't have a lot of money, you know, you can get one of those little mini tarot decks or something. Those little, I've seen them. Somebody bought a bunch last year at the dollar store. They went to the dollar store and found tarot decks at the dollar store. you know, so that was like awesome.
I didn't see that coming. Sorry.
Yeah, really. The dollar store. It was in the cards. You know, with the
yeah,
cards,
if you are handy with, if you know your runes, like I said, you can use river rocks and you can draw the runes on the rocks, and that works really well.
And that'll cost you a Sharpie.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and maybe the glitter spray, if you want to do the glitter spray.
If you want to.
Because
pagans
are all about the glitter and sparklies. It's true.
You
know, it's true.
But that's, you know, and you know, something like rocks, I mean, you know, that's going to ship well, so no problem there.
Yeah, it won't. They won't break. So
yeah.
The things that we do need the most of right now are things like we mentioned the various divination items, pagan jewelry, any handmade amulets, talismans, things like that always work well. The other thing that we do, and this was an idea from actually Michelle Boshears, who is the DFGL coordinator. She's also a circle sanctuary minister. She came up with the idea of using, you know, since so many people cannot light things, of sending them the little individual flameless tea light. So we always need flameless tea lights. And you can get those any number of places. You can get them at craft stores.
Walmart.
Dollar
Target.
Yeah.
They sell them at dollar stores, too.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh, and in fact, at this time of year, you can probably get the Christmassy-looking ones. So there you go. Yeah, so those are always good. Let's see. Oh, your good standard pagan books. You know, authors like Cunningham, Chris Pinzak, some of the other biggies like Edaine McCoy.
The Higginbothams.
Your basic topics, herbalism, stones, crystals, Wicca, witchcraft, Norse stuff, some shamanism thrown in for good measure, those kinds of stuff.
You can always, music. I'm sure music is appreciated.
Yes.
Because.
Yes,
music. You know, if you want inspiration on music, you can look back at shameless plug for my show, any of my old shows, and see some of the different artists that I've had. You know, you got Kenny Klein, you've got Kaliana, Celia, Tuatha Dea, Murphy's Midnight Rounders. Now that I've started mentioning people, I'm going to be in trouble if I don't mention everybody. S.J. Tucker,
Wendy Rule, so. Kaliana.
Wendy Rule, yes.
S.J. Tucker.
Biorhythm. Arthur Rhyme. Rose. You can, Kudu, you can go listen to some of my old shows. Anyone that I forgot, I'm so sorry. But any if you want to hit me up and ask me, you know, hey, my friend likes this type of music, and who do you suggest or recommend? But there's a lot of really good pagan music out there, and I know that people respond well to that, to having that.
They do, and you know, one of the things that we haven't previously mentioned is how one of the things, again, this is what a previous person has done is we throw in thank you cards. There's many times where people have limited email access and stuff, so they can't really send an email and say, hey, thanks. So we add
thank you card.
A little thank you card in there, and a number of them do get used, and so we've had them sent back to us over the years, and people are just so overwhelmed and grateful. Sometimes people, the person who gets the gift is the person who sent us the email, but many times it's not like that. Many times it'll be a group leader with, you know, a list of names, or it'll be a family member or a friend that gives us their information or their coven or something. And so they are just usually very shocked in a good way, happy, tickled pink, and just really overwhelmed by people's generosity. So it's a really cool thing, and it's a great way just to connect. You know, the person who you're sending it stuff to really, you know, gets to connect with somebody in their community.
And one thing to keep in mind, if you have a group, a coven, whatever, where you're at, and you want to help out with Operation Circle Care, like I mentioned, that you're the clearinghouse for Circle Sanctuary.
So
I know that there's been. Go ahead.
So the best thing to do is if you have things to donate, or you're a person who's stationed overseas, or you have somebody who is overseas, send us an email at occ@circlesanctuary.org. That's the best way to get a hold of us. Go ahead.
I just wanted to mention the unpleasant, you know, sometimes people who would like to have the names of people to send it to because they have a group, we can't do that.
Right.
And, you know, Circle decided a long time ago that it's just a better, safer thing for the person to, just for privacy concerns, that they made a policy a long time ago that
they don't share
the information. Now, this is not to say that more than one pagan group who knows of somebody can't send somebody stuff. I mean, the more the merrier. So, just to keep that in mind that, if we have the name of somebody, we unfortunately are not allowed to pass that along to somebody else. But like I said, if you're a small group or a coven or a grove or what have you, and you want to send us stuff,
we'll include it, and we're fine. We will be more than happy to include, you know, if you're a group or something, you want to send a card or something, send your information about, you know, your group or whatever, we'll include that in the box. That's fine. We don't have a problem with that, of including stuff that identifies other groups, you know, so that people know where this stuff came from. We'll definitely do that. You know, we just can't give out the names for that. But we'll, you know, we can definitely, if you want to say like this, you know, please enjoy this, what you call it, from, you know, our gift to you from, you know, the coven of the Silvery Moon or whatever you're called. You know, I think that's great because then people can see where it's all coming from. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, in fact, what a lot of people have done from the smaller groups and covens is that they will send something. It might be in addition to sending various things, they also have a Christmas, Yuletide cards that has the group's information and particulars, so they'll do that. But I've had a number of groups have, let's say it's an amulet or something. They have it in a little baggie with, you know, this comes from the coven of so-and-so and the URL or the email address. And that becomes a great quick way for that person to, you know, write back and, you know, start some dialogue going.
Sure.
Awesome. I'm sorry, David, I did cut you off when you were giving the information to contact, and you cannot mention that enough. So please, again, mention,
no problem.
Mention how do they contact you.
So, right, just send an email to occ@circlesanctuary.org. You know, tell us, hey, you know, this is, you know, whether it's a name and address to send something to, or you've got stuff to donate. If you have things to donate, you send us the email and tell us that you have stuff. We'll reply back with our address of where you can send everything to. You know, we want you to send it. We'd prefer you people send it straight to our home address here in Northern Virginia instead of sending it to Circle, because that saves Circle having to then forward the package to us and, you know, the extra postage that's involved with that. So, yeah, just send it straight to us, because we put it all together and we ship them all out. We ship everything up from here. So, you know, and there's times, you know, the post office where we'll show up at the post office and, you know, we'll have our wagon full of boxes that we walk into the post office with, and we know we get the looks from people, you know, because it's right as the holiday mail drive is starting to happen and folks at the post office are getting busy, and there have been times where we've monopolized the time of a person at the post office
for a good half hour.
For at least
so.
A good half hour,
mm-hmm.
just doing all the processing of the packages and stuff with all the customs forms and
everything.
Uh-huh.
But we're good. We have a system down. So we have everything, you know, all of our packages are all good to go and set up. And what we do is we use the flat rate boxes, the large flat rate boxes that go to the FPO and APO addresses. Thankfully, it's a little bit cheaper to send to FPO and APO addresses. That's something that the USPS does. And then there are special other labels that we have to fill out. And so we just pre-stage all that stuff here at our house. So, and also, we are on Facebook. Just look for Operation Circle Care, and you'll be able to find us. We have a Facebook page for that, so if you can't remember the email address, just remember Operation Circle Care and look for us on Facebook too, and that's a good way to get the communication rolling as well.
Yeah.
And so,
go ahead.
Yeah, and the last thing, I know we're starting to run out of time. The deadline for both things. The deadline for A, getting a name to us, B, getting stuff to us, is really the Thanksgiving weekend. And
we can accept things later, but the deadline to ship, and this is a post office, you know, the military mail system deadline is, what was that, 5th of December, is the deadline to ship things to the zip codes that start with 093, which are the Middle East, Afghanistan, Kuwait, those areas, to guarantee delivery by Christmas. We have to have it at the post office by December 5th. So we ask to have stuff as much as possible by Thanksgiving, because that's the weekend that we start putting the packages together.
Right.
Now, not to say that we can't send packages out afterwards if we get more stuff.
Because we do.
And we will, and we do. We know some people get a box, you know, after Christmas, because we may not get their name until sometime in December when the word, you know. And we've had these cases where, you know, Johnny gets the box, and Mary sees the box. Hey, what's that? Oh, can I get one too? Okay, and they send us their information, and we send them a box. So
that
Mary,
happens every,
you know,
year, actually.
Which is great.
Yeah.
You know, so, but we do try to ask that we get as much as possible by Thanksgiving. Cool?
There was something else I wanted to say that was very important along those lines. But I can't remember, so I guess it wasn't that important. No, I was going to talk about next week's show. Next week is
PMSR.
So,
are we going to do that?
Huh?
Oh, was
okay.
It PMSR?
Oh, hang on. She's trying to talk to me. Okay, so we've been in touch with Circle, and because it's a Veterans Day, you know, for the next one, it's right after Veterans Day is on Monday, and Wednesdays are, you know, big Veterans Day show and second anniversary of Pagan Warrior Radio and stuff. We've been in touch with Selena in the Circle office about, and I know this is sort of, we haven't had a chance to tell you about this, Pam, so this is kind of a surprise, and I'm sorry about that, because
surprise!
We just had
no, it's
like,
okay, because it,
like in the
it
past 12 hours. So we're going to do another PMSR awarding show next Wednesday. So we'll be awarding the Pagan Military Service Ribbons next Wednesday to folks who have not received them. So if you're interested in receiving this ribbon, which is a recognition of Pagans who've served in the military, who are or have served, you know, it's a metal, you know, pin in the size and shape of a military ribbon, you know, it's the Pagan Military Service Ribbon. You can find information about it on the Circle website. Go to Our Work and the Military Ministries to see all this stuff. So if anybody's interested in receiving a ribbon during the show, send your information into the Circle, you know, submit the information on the website. Also contact the Circle office, let them know that you're interested in getting it during the show so we can have that, be ready for that. Selena Fox may or may not be joining us. I think we're still working out schedule on that. But we usually have others like Reverend Dave Sassman who sort of spearheaded and came up with the design and for the ribbon, the idea of this ribbon is sort of his idea. So we'll be doing that. So that's what we'll be doing next week. It's sort of a quick change to what we had been talking about.
It works because what I had put on the schedule and what we had talked about in the past was the fact that it's our 2-year anniversary show.
Right.
And the 2-year anniversary show started out on Veterans Day. It was 11/11/11.
Right.
It's when we first started the show. So, and that's when we first announced about the Pagan Military Service Ribbon. So
yeah,
it's great. It's full circle and it's circle sanctuary. So it works. But we're running out of time. We got to go into Galena's show, Galena Kraskova's show, Weird Ways Live. And Michael, is it Rowdery? If I pronounce it wrong, Michael, please forgive me. He's a poet, writer, experimental reconstructionist, pagan druid, myth-based polytheist. A lot of really, it's going to be a great, 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 exciting show for Galena coming up next. And then next week we have the Pagan Military Service Ribbons on the Pagan Music Project afterwards, which is the music show that I have every other week. I've got Kenny Klein coming because he's got some new stuff coming out. Did you know he's doing blogs for the Huffington Post now?
No way.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, pretty cool. So we'll be talking to him about that, one of his latest projects called Fishbird, and all sorts of stuff, see what's going on. Kenny and Lauren's book should be coming out soon if it isn't already. So that's all coming up next week. But coming up next is Galena Kraskova. Again, Pagan Military Service Ribbon, if you're interested in it, go to www.circlesanctuary.org, find out information on how you can get awarded the Pagan Military Service Ribbon on next week's show here on the Pagans Tonight Radio Network. So David and Jeanette, great show, great weekend. Hopefully we get a lot of great stuff, a great week. I hope you have a great week. I hope you get a lot of stuff for Operation Circle Care. And if you missed hearing about it, share it with your friends. Download it later. Let people know about it. Make sure people know that they can get stuff sent to them if they're overseas. So,
perfect.
Anything else that you guys want to add?
I think that's it.
I think we're good.
Awesome. Okay, so here we go. This week I'm not going to forget taps. This is the end of the Pagan Warrior Radio, sponsored by Circle Sanctuary, and it's on Pagans Tonight Radio Network.
Weird Ways Radio. Weird Ways Live. Radio. Live. Live. Join your host, author, and Northern Tradition Shaman, Galina Kraskova, with guests from across the contemporary spectrum of pagan, heathen, and polytheistic communities for an hour of in-depth and thought-provoking discussions on a variety of community issues, news, controversies, and practices. Come and learn new things and deepen your understanding of polytheism and explore what it means to be actively engaged in the restoration of ancestral traditions. It's a good day to be an animist, folks. Tune in and join us at 10-9 Central on the first and third Wednesdays of every month. Weird Ways Radio. Weird Ways Radio. Weird Ways Radio.
We call now upon our honored dead. We ask that they guide the work we do tonight. We call upon our grandmothers and our grandfathers, our warrior dead, our loving dead, and all those whose sacrifices and hopes paved the way for us to be here today. We are our ancestors' victory, the sum total of their hopes and dreams walking. May they ever be honored. We call upon mitochondrial Eve, our eldest mother, to rip the filter from our eyes. May she ever be honored. We call upon her mighty daughters to witness the words we speak here tonight. May they too be honored. May we speak together with reason, clarity, and integrity. May our ancestors guide us. May our words and discussions do honor both our beloved dead and the holy powers we revere. May it be.
Hi, folks. This is your host, Galina, and I'm here with my co-host, Sanyan. I'm trying to get online right now. Sanyan,
hey,
can you hear me?
How's it going?
Hey, good, good. To my listeners, I say welcome to another episode of Weird Ways Radio. We have a really interesting guest for you tonight, and I will bring him online in just a moment. I want to tell you a little bit about him first. Michael Rattery is a poet, a writer, an experimental reconstructionist pagan, a druid, fili, myth-based polytheist, and he's written quite a bit. From Windows Press, he has a book called From the Prow of Myth, and we're going to be talking with him a little bit about that tonight. His writings can also be found in a number of Bibliotheca Alexandrina anthologies, including Written in Wine, The Scribing Ibis, and Out of Arcadia, and the Scarlet Imprint anthologies, Datura and Mandragora. And I just want to give a plug to Neos Alexandria. They have, along with Asphodel Press, Neos Alexandria has been putting out a phenomenal series of devotionals to the various gods. Asphodel Press has been focusing primarily on Norse deities, and then it's been lovely to see Neos Alexandria offering devotional to the Greek and Roman deities. And I believe that they just had a devotional to Juno and Hera come out. Although for the life of me, even though I've been sharing this all over the net, Sanyan, I can't remember the name of it. Can you?
I can't remember either, unfortunately.
Well, I urge you all to go to Bibliotheca, to neosalexandria.org. It'll be up on their page. It just came out a couple days ago. This I think it's called From the Peacock Throne. It's a wonderful devotional to Hera and to Juno. So now that that plug is over, because I'm really happy with the work they're doing.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I'm glad to see a book for them, because
right?
I don't think they get nearly enough attention in the community.
I remember 10 years ago, there was nothing. I mean, if you wanted the devotional, you were out of luck.
Yep.
I mean, there really wasn't anything contemporary. So it's been a real joy to see, just over the past few years, a real explosion in devotional writing. And that is a good point to welcome our guest tonight. Michael, are you there? Can you hear me?
Hi, yes, I'm here.
Good, good. Welcome. Welcome. Thank you for coming on the show tonight.
Sure, sure. It's a pleasure.
So, Sanyan told me when we were preparing to have you on that you just came out with a book called From the Prow of Myth.
Yes, yes. That's just came out this October.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, From the Prow of Myth is a collection of poems. They are devotional poems. Some of them are praise poems, visionary poems. The book is divided into three sections that we're kind of roughly divide in one section for Celtic, another one for Greek, Hellenic, and then a third section which is more poems of local place, nature poems, with something of an animus bent to them, mostly in California.
That is really cool, and I think it's really important to have that local dimension to your worship, and it's especially appropriate to honor that through poetry, since at least with the Greeks, you know, the nymphs are often associated with the inspiration of poetry and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, I think that's something that's still somewhat missing, at least within North America, where. At least in my experience, it seems like a lot of people are almost completely focused on, you know, kind of universal deities, but not doing the local work. I mean, I know you certainly do that a lot in the Willamette River.
But yeah, I don't think nearly enough people are really connecting with those local spirits and also the local forms of the more universal deities. And that was such an essential part of ancient stuff. It's kind of interesting. And I wonder if that's because we're, you know, Americans, and so we're concerned about, you know, the, you know, First Nations peoples and their deities and not wanting to be, you know, exploitive.
I think it's more that so many of us live in cities. I mean, paganism in the U.S. Is really a phenomenon of the coast, of the East and the West Coast. I mean, it eventually spread inland. And certainly now we have pagan communities in every state, but I think we have a lot of us in cities, and I honor.
Yeah.
I have.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like my beginning with working with land spirits was actually working with city spirits. So.
I like.
I don't
them.
Think,
well, it's really interesting.
Before. I
yeah,
prefer
you know,
actually
because...
working with city spirits.
Boy, a lot of my work is with land spirits, but they're here in cities too. You know, I live in an urban area, but there's a lot of nature also. I have done some incorporation also in terms of local founders, things of that nature also. But I think people, they think, well, that they live in a city or a suburb and that somehow... There's, you know, the rivers aren't out there, the trees aren't out there, the springs and the lakes and the waterways aren't out there, but they are. Or at least, you know, people only need to take a very short little journey usually to do so. But, I mean, I think even in your, you know, even in the shower you find other spirits and whatnot.
Yeah.
Or just go outside and actually talk to the spirits of the city in which you live. I mean, everything is alive. I think that the animist piece sometimes gets lost. I mean, I see a lot of various branches of paganism push very hard for environmental causes, and that's great. But there doesn't seem to be the hand-in-hand with that. There doesn't seem to be across the board the awareness that there's living sentience all around us.
Well, I think it remains kind of abstract, though, for a lot of people in that way. Now, from my Celtic practices, it's just always been really important to go out and communicate with the waterways. You know, in the old days, of course, all the rivers were seen as goddesses. I know in the Mediterranean world, often they were seen as male. But here in the Bay Area, the rivers are really creeks, but I found it was a really good way for me to start communicating with, to start working with the local creek wherever I happen to be living. And that is something that ties in with old practices, although it's very much bringing it into new territory. And I found it you know, very fruitful over the years doing that. And then another thing that I did in this in my book is I have a poem to Califia, who I see is who I address as the land goddess of the larger area of California, which interestingly enough was named after an Amazon queen from a Renaissance romance.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, and so I, you know, again, it's a larger area, but I mean, I think still it's like making that sort of personal address and making that kind of relationship. I see Colombia's gotten quite a lot of attention, but I mean, the United States is such a gigantic nation state that I think, again, it doesn't really get people down at all to where they actually live.
I have encountered a couple of pagans just recently who are paying cultists to specific deities, but it's the deity, say Athena, but it's Athena of the place where they are. Like, she very much indicated to them that she wished to be venerated in connection to the place where they were at, or Odin, or this or deity, or that deity. I'm starting to encounter that. It's not widespread at all, but it seems to be something that's burbling up here and there in various polytheisms, this connection of deity veneration of the gods with the local places. And I think that there's something really vital in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that seems like a, you know, new development and everything and, you know, innovation, but that's actually going back to the very roots of those ancient polytheisms, because that's how they dealt with things, especially when they were sending out colonists and, you know, that kind of thing. You would find the local form of your deity.
Yeah. When you go to honor your local spirits, is there any particular form that the veneration takes? I mean, is there anything that you could share with us? I mean, I'm sure that some of the people listening are thinking, hey, maybe I should do that. But then there's always the going from the thought to the actual practice, and that can be a scary leap for some people.
Michael? Is our guest here?
Let me check. We might have lost him. No, he's still there. Michael? Oh, well, Sanyan, can you answer that? Mercury in retrograde. I'm just going with it.
Yeah, fun times. let's see. Well, I think one of the first things you've got to do is actually get out there and go to the places. And if you don't know where those places are, I recommend going on just kind of a roundabout, you know, kind of vagabondy journey through your city and just kind of like be open and feel out the various places and, you know, find something that resonates with you and then, you know, keep coming back and, you know, keep making offerings and, you know, try to feel out what the appropriate offerings are for that entity and, you know, and then slowly you're going to build up a relationship with them. And I think a big part of that is always going to be remaining open because, you know, like a lot of things can happen, a lot of interaction between you and the spirit of that place that, you know, I think some people just kind of dismiss as coincidence. But, you know, that's how those spirits reach out to us is through those random occurrences. So, you know.
I agree. We seem to have momentarily lost Michael. I mean, it's been a week for technical difficulties, I think.
Oh, no.
I know that I didn't pay any attention to honoring city spirits or river spirits until I was traveling with my mom. Mm-hmm. And we were in Paris, and we were walking along the Seine, and I had such an incredibly strong sense from the moment we set foot in the city in which she had been born.
Yeah.
Of not only the sentience of Paris herself, but the sentience of the Seine. And he's a lovely river spirit, absolutely lovely. And it was the two of them, you know, being in, I started to engage with them. I mean, you can't not
mm-hmm.
when a presence is that strong. And the lessons that they taught me are things that I brought back. And then it was like, oh, I should have been doing this with New York City all along. Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, exactly, and that's how it is. And for me, like, I grew up in, you know, the Northwest and Montana and all that. So, you know, like, I didn't really appreciate the natural beauty and the power of the spirits until I went to Las Vegas and then the Bronx. And those are such different environments. And, you know, I first, you know, got sort of a sense of land spirits in Las Vegas because it was so different than anything that I had experienced
yeah.
before that it kind of like blew my mind. But then it was in the Bronx that I actually started developing relationships because I would go to parks and stuff and, you know, over time I would develop this. But then, you know, like I came back to, you know, the Northwest and I just got like blown over with the intensity of the spirits out here because, again, they're so different than another areas and, you know, very sort of new and open and wild and old as well and just very intense. And it really just hit me when I came back.
Yeah, I know that for me that's what it took. It was completely being out of my normal everyday element. We got Michael back. Michael, are you there?
Oh, yay!
Yes. They said it's Mercury retrograde.
Yeah, something like that. Hail Hermes, please help us do the show.
Absolutely. Hail Hermes.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, are there any deities that you have a particular devotional relationship with?
Oh, yes, certainly. Bridget is one. Nuada is another one. Dionysus is another one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I come in one of those people who's polypraxis, which is an interesting thing. I know some people, there's still that idea that, you know, you should only be practicing one tradition, but life
That's
is,
crap.
Just
That's
is
not,
not
how
that
our ancestors
simple.
Did it.
Yeah.
That's not what our ancestors did. That is something
exactly.
I think that is going to be the death of contemporary polytheism if we're not careful. Our ancestors venerated their household gods, their ancestral gods, the gods of their spouses, the gods of place where they were at, any local cultists they might want to join, initiatory traditions. It's polytheism. It's not xenophobic. I'm so glad you brought this up. This is a pet peeve of mine lately because I see it actually damaging good polytheists. There is no reason to be exclusive. The gods call whom they call, and it is right and proper to venerate them.
And the thing is, they're often calling very loudly to people, and I do believe we have individual choice, but I mean, nevertheless, does one really want to say, no, I'm not opening the door because, you know, I only work with Baltic deities or, you know, whatever the case may be.
Exactly. And it just strikes me as incredibly short-sighted and rude. Now, I will say there is learning appropriate protocol for each of the deities. But that's something you would have to do anyway, even if you were working within one tradition.
Well, yeah, I think that in certain neo-pagan contexts and in certain Wiccan contexts, you know, there's no understanding of that. And I know that makes me very uncomfortable also. You know, over long years of journeying, you know, I've experienced kind of one extreme to the other. You know, then later I was very much in a Celtic Reconstructionist milieu, and I was exposed to a lot of this attitude, like, you can only worship these deities, you know, if you're on this path, and that never really sat well with me. And then I had some experiences where some of the Mediterranean deities came back, or at least in certain cases very strongly. And I think a lot of us are exposed to some of the Greek deities as children since still, you know, I think it's a good thing that, oh, I don't know about right now, but at least with my generation, we were talking about,
Michael, I have a friend that teaches a Greek literature class for freshmen in college, and she had a class over the summer. Not a single person in the class knew who Homer was. So
keep in mind, they're freshmen in college. College.
I'm like, you don't know that. You should not be in college. But that's me. So it's nowadays with the current crop of teenagers, I'm not so sure. Although it's possible, I hate to say it, that with some of the movies that are coming out, maybe they'll at least spark an interest in the sacred stories.
Yeah. What do you think, though, about like some of those popular Percy films? I mean, do you think they pull some people into where then they start to explore what the myths actually are?
I'm very conflicted about them, because what I'm dealing with as a heathen is the Marvel Avengers and Thor and Loki crap. And they're fun movies. They're a fun movie. But I can't tell if some of the people who are drawn into the religion by these movies actually understand that there's a difference between the gods and the fictional character that Marvel Universe has created. I don't like the way I see that line sometimes getting blurred by newcomers. But then at the same time, yes, it's spurring an interest in young people that may eventually lead them to come into what for some of them might be their ancestral tradition.
Yeah. I mean, I got my start reading fantasy fiction. So, I mean, you know, it can certainly happen. It's concerning, some of the stuff that's out there.
I mean, you can't do a Google image search for images of the god Loki without wading through 16-plus pages of images of Tom Hiddleston.
Yeah. Melanoe, for instance, this goddess that I just got really interested in recently, there's like two or three classical representations of her. And then everything else is apparently she's a minor character in Percy Jackson. So there's all of this, you know, fan art and, you know, stills from the movies and, like, nothing else, you know. It's very strange.
What is your thought on it, Michael?
Well, I mean, this makes me think of some of the pop cultist thing that came up last summer. You know, people that said they were offering devotion to superheroes, and which at the time really rubbed me wrong. But I think it's really complicated because I think, you know, it's the role of art and literature to inspire us and touch on such things too. But it's just the quality of some of it is, or else some of it is really, it's only being motivated by what can make or hopefully make big bucks. And I think that kind of commercialization can really be degrading.
Mm-hmm. And they're even like changing the innate nature of the characters and stuff in order to, you know, further profit margins and things like that. So,
yeah, and then I think you get to a point where, you know, if you have any kind of integrity, then you should come up with a new name, because, you know, there might be a little bit of Thor, let's say, and I'm just using that as an example, in your character, but it really isn't, you know, Thor. So why not just come up with a, you know, invent a name for your character?
We'll call all things even when we have Marvel Avengers Jesus. When I see Marvel Avengers Jesus, then maybe I'll get off my soapbox about pop culture paganism and the dangers of conflating fiction with reality of the gods. But you don't see that. It's always someone else's religion that they're trashing.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
I want to see Marvel Avengers Jesus.
There is actually a comic book done by Rob Liefeld where Jesus yanks himself off the cross and then goes all Arnold Schwarzenegger on the Olympians.
Oh.
Like he battles Zeus and stuff. Oh, it's really, really bad. Because, I mean, Rob Layfield is not a good artist to begin with. He apparently can't draw hands and feet for anything. And, oh, it's just bad.
There are some things you just can't unsee.
Yep.
And I was wondering, you know, personally, there comes a point in devotional practice where you really, I just don't want to clutter up my mind with things that don't bring me closer in devotion to my God. I mean, there's enough crap that we have to wade through in our daily lives, moving in a secular society that's in reality in America very Christian. I don't want to clutter up my mind with more crap. I have enough of it.
Exactly, and I think a lot of people are doing that sometimes without even realizing it. I mean, like, you look at all these people talking about these conversations that they're having with the gods, and they're always, the gods are always so ironic and snarky and, you know, exactly like the characters on their favorite TV shows. And I'm not saying the gods can't come across like that, but I just wonder if they're only letting themselves have this very superficial experience with them and not actually listening for that authentic voice of the God.
Yeah.
And I think we always have filters, you know, like clearer or more opaque ones. But
absolutely.
I'm always very – I just – I'm suspicious of people who also are claiming that the deities are communicating them with them about really trivial or very small points of things.
I'm sorry, but, you know, Odin the Allfather probably has something a little more important to concern himself with than whether your socks match your shirt, you know?
Words.
Yeah,
that's
which dance step you use in your high school musical, you know.
Yeah, and frankly, if you are actually talking to this god, I would want to talk to him about more serious things. You know, like, this is a guy, this is a god who died for wisdom, and you're going to be talking to him about, you know, your day-to-day stuff? No, you're going to be asking him about mysteries and, you know, big things,
or major life direction stuff that would have a deep level.
Yeah.
Well, part of it, though, is that we're dealing with a community coming from our current culture that wants to say, I mean, I've seen this, that the idea that the sole purpose of engagement with the gods is to make us feel better. I mean, it's crap.
Mm-hmm.
The sole purpose of engagement with the gods is engagement with the gods.
And even also,
maybe, but I mean, it's not. There's this attitude that we're always at the center of the equation, and until that's cracked, nothing can get done spiritually.
And that's one of the biggest obstructions on so many levels today. You know, also including the way people want to think they're the center of the whole web of nature, of this planet, but. You know, also I think relating to this about feeling good is just we have people, especially in the United States, but increasingly everywhere, who are just raised to just want everything to be entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
And then, maybe they approach the deities then, too, in this way that these are amusing, entertaining characters, just like in their Marvel comics and their movies and their TV shows. And I think that creates a really a deep barrier, you know, between any authentic spirituality. And then also I think that there's this whole thing of, well, I think it ties in with this kind of cynical, ironic, ultra-ironic attitude, which really is more of a defense mechanism than opening any conduits of spiritual communication.
Yep. That is really profound.
Yeah. Yeah, I think.
Hey, do you have any of your poetry handy? I'd like to hear some of that.
All right. Would you like me to read like about three poems or what?
Go ahead and do one, and then maybe we'll take a phone. You know, mention the phone if people want to call in.
Oh yeah, before you start reading, let me give our listeners the number. It's 347-308-8222. If you want to ask a question, or you have a comment that you'd like to make, or you you want to talk to us, give us a call, 347-308-8222. Okay, Michael, I'm going to turn it over to you because I would love to hear some of your poetry. I haven't had a chance to read your book yet, and from what Tanya's told me, it's interesting.
All right, well, here's one, MacLear. This is from Mananon MacLear of the Gaelic gods. In the streaming of the water, in the endless cycles, in the foam and surge, the eddies and tides crashing on the long silver and gold strands, pounding the hoary cliffs in lucent blue or the gray-green of cloudy days on the shore or far beyond the ninth wave in the tang of salt air, the churning of sand, the tireless combers, the nip of cold water, the wreaths of kelp, in the mournful ruckus of your gulls, or in the primeval flight of pelicans, or the snowy swoop of terns. In the tousling tides of the heart, I have heard you. Rising with cauldron, rising on, riding on foaming charger, drumming in sea caves, awash in gold, silver, and iron, fountaining green, blue, and white, shining by the waters at the center of the world. I attend to the flow, the rise, the fall of the cadences. Never-ending is your chant. Mananon MacLear, wise counsel, son of the sea, navigator and steersman, may you guide us. Mediator, may you calm our hearts and raise up our minds in your net. You who know the secret isles, the core of things, where wisdom arises like fingerlings of fog from the seeth of the waters, where seals change to human and back again, and cranes call in the mist.
Wow, that was powerful.
May he be hailed now and always. Hail Mananon MacLear.
Right.
Could you tell a little bit about him, maybe? Do one more.
Okay, well, Mananon is an opener of the ways. He is in the mist. He's often considered a sea god. He's a mediator. And in a lot of druid rituals, he's called upon, invited at the pretty much at the commence of a ritual to open the gates.
Very cool.
And the Isle of Man is named after him, or some would say he's named after the Isle of Man. Yeah. All right. So,
another one?
Yeah,
what's this one about?
Okay, I'll read Retinue. This is a Dionysian one, really direct to the mystery of the procession and to the ecstatic Lord and Ariadne. What a retinue it is, this wandering theosos of the ecstatic Lord, dancing through mountain wilderness, winding through the torch-lit forest of night's desire. Maenads, with their pine-tipped staffs erect and heads thrown back, rampaging satyrs with old Silenus at their head, wise teacher of the young lord. And in the drums and rattles of the rites, the women, their hair hanging free, carrying him for a sway, and the great crown nymphs, too, girls dressed in leopard, nails bright, and the rough-at-the-edge boys shaking their heads like young bulls. The Choretes, enthralled to the music, stamp, roaming like riotous spirits of the dead through the thickets, banging gongs and drums. And then come those sinuous snakes emerging from Gaia's secret depths, adorned with the bright plumage of the nymphs of Mount Nysa, the mountain ladies' androgens, praising the purple fruit, pressing the grapes, quaffing the nectar like hummingbirds. The bull and the stag are here too, The Bitch and the Doe, and Large Cats Slink, barely seen under leafy shadows. And Ariadne, loved at last, but still doing the labyrinth dance with her love, ivy-crowned, in flowing robe and panther-eyed in the midst, ungating the revels of night's vast commonwealth.
Wow, that was intense, man. That was very intense.
I love that. I love seeing devotional work, including Ariadne.
Very much so. So how did you get interested in Dionysus?
Dionysus, I think, first came to me when I was visiting Greece when I was very young.
Ah.
And at various points in my life kept reappearing. And then I went, I went through a Celtic recon stage where I was like, you shouldn't be working with deities from other pantheons or whatever.
Yeah.
But that didn't last for very long. And then Dionysus came very strongly through to me when I went through an Antinoan rite. Yes, and he was present, and that was just a major thing.
Yeah. Encounter with him usually is. So what's it like balancing the Celtic and Greek traditions?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question, Tanya, and I'm kind of curious as well. Because I work in a multi-traditional house, and there is a balancing act.
Yeah, well, the Celtic is my primary tradition, and so I most often am working within a Celtic framework, but then I have, these other deities, Greek deities. I honor Hermes also, Antinous. I've always made homage to Diana, Aphrodite, and so on. But I guess in a way, it's like one changes channels, but I don't find it that hard to switch. Now, I mean, I will use different customs and ritual protocols, certainly if I'm doing something Greek than with Celtic. But then I do morning prayers where I call out to my deities, and I don't really find that I have, and that sort of a thing, like I have to do anything really differently.
Yeah.
I do address Theoi and Dea, not like in just one big mass, but I find that I'm able to do something like that. But in terms of a ritual, a major ritual, of course, I'm going to be doing things differently.
Yeah, and depending on what you're doing, there'll be varying degrees of formality.
Exactly.
Hey, Michael?
You don't have to be very formal with the prayer.
I got to pop in here. We have a question, actually. Someone in the chat wants to know if you've included poems for Pan in your book.
There is one for Pan, yes.
Oh, my. That was the question. They were curious. I've had a couple of devotees of Pan coming out of the woodwork lately.
They're everywhere.
Out of Arcadia, I have something in that book, too, which if they don't know it, I recommend they get that. It's a bit, Bibliotheca Alexandrina.
Yeah, that's Out of Arcadia. It's a lovely devotional fan. I think I actually have something in it too. It's one of the big. We're everywhere. It's one of the Bibliotheca Alexandrina books. So nice to hear. I've just lately had devotees fan contacting me. It's rather delightful.
Back to the Greek Celtic thing. I think people will make things more difficult than they really are often. I do find, there is an underlying Indo-European heritage, although I know that the Greeks were very influenced by the Semitic world to the east of them also, and in Egypt. But, I mean, there are so many underlying similarities when you really dig deep. Now, a place has become
even down to a lot of the ritual actions are very similar, you know, across cultures and stuff, especially if you're talking about that, you know, sort of pan-Mediterranean.
Right. And, you know, there was one place where they really came together in a very happy way, which was Massilia. You know, modern Marseille, and you know that according to the at least the founding legend of that city, the Greek colonist who settled there, you know, he did so by marrying the daughter of the local Celtic chief, and it reads very much as a land goddess myth, you know, through a Celtic lens. Her name was Pella, and it's a really fascinating story. It's something I think I want to actually delve into more and maybe write about.
Oh, exciting. Do you use a lot of historical stuff as basis for poems?
Well, I certainly do a lot of historical reading, so I think it, you know, that bubbles up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, were there callers, or are we waiting for that?
No, we do not have any callers, so we can keep talking, which is fine by me. Sometimes we get callers, sometimes we don't. It's really
call in somebody, call in. We're lonely.
Now, as part of your Celtic practice, do you maintain any type of hero cultist? I know I've talked with. We have a caller. Hold on a second. I think we have a caller. Hold on. Our wonderful tech person is working it out, so bear with me. I'm trying to get this person.
They'll know who that is if you mention it.
Nix, are you online? Can you hear us?
Actually, hello, Galina?
Hi. Yes.
Yeah, this is P. Sufinus Virius Lupus, actually.
Hey, I was just going to mention you and Cucullin. Welcome.
Yeah. Well,
fabulous.
It's interesting because when I got on the line, I just got off work, Michael was reading one of his absolutely fantastic poems, and then the next thing you talked about was...
He is such a great poet.
Oh, yeah, you know. Then the next thing you talked about was Antinous, and it was like, hey...
We're calling you.
Yep. So,
hey, Lupus.
But it's great to, you know, have all three of you, three of my very favorite polytheists, you know, in voice range. But I hope it's an interesting question that I wanted to throw to all of you. I think it'd be interesting to hear each of your answers. But before I ask that, I just want to fully, heartily, unconditionally recommend At the Prow of Myth. Everyone go out and get this book. You need this book. It's great. I will be posting a review of it on my blog in a couple of days. But here's the question, and I don't know if any of you have been asked this before, but it occurred to me on the way back from work. Of all of the traditions that you know of all of the polytheist cultures and pantheons and so forth that you know of, and all of the literature that was ever produced by them, okay, what is the one or two works that we know the names of but are now lost would you wish to be able to take out of the magical library that has everything in it?
Ooh, good question. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, I just wish we had more than anything some of the Celtic cycles and poems, you know, from recorded before the monks got there.
Right, right.
That would be my first thing. It would sure be great to have gotten some of the Gallic works in one way or another, too.
Yeah. Have some Roman guy, you know, Cicero's stenographer writing down very fast, you know, some nice Gaulish stuff.
Exactly.
What about for some of the Greek stuff that's lost or that we just have fragments of? I mean, it would be incredible to have some really full, extensive corpus from Sappho. It certainly jumps immediately to my mind.
Yeah.
Or Archilochus also, you know, so many of his poems are fragments.
Yeah.
Well, for me, what I would want, there's actually two that I'm kind of equally drawn. One of them is the Edonai by Aeschylus, and that's his account of Dionysus' confrontation with Lycurgus. And the fragments that are preserved from that are really amazing. Because there's this one where, like, you know, the voices start rising up from the ground like a bellowing bull, and, you know, the whole room shakes, and, you know, like all these phantom forms are flitting about, and it's like, I want to know what else is going on there. And then the other one that I really, really want is before Nonnus wrote his epic about Dionysus, about, you know, like 60 years or so before, there was another epic by a Greco-Egyptian author called the Basarica, which is all about Dionysus. And all we have is this one fragment where he's sneaking into the camp of the Indians, and he's like driving them and saying, so they go out and they hunt this deer, and he's tricked the Indian soldiers, and he's like, you know, ensnared them, and then the satyrs go out and they hunt this deer, and then they put the Indian guy inside the carcass of the deer and send him back into the enemy's camp, and then they all eat the thing, you know, because, like, Dionysus drives them into a frenzy, and then later on it turns out that, you know, they ate their own companion, so it's like, what else is going on in this whole epic? And, you know, that's a scene that's not represented anywhere else in mythology, so it makes you wonder what other stories there were.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. You know, another thing it would be wonderful to have, I would find, would be a Hadrian's autobiography.
Oh, yes. Needless to say, yes.
I would just be happy to have something written about the Norse gods, their practices, their sacred stories, several hundred years before the colonization by Christianity. Several hundred years before our traditions were wiped out, not 200 years after by a politician and Christian. I'd like to have something in from the hand of those who actually practiced. And personally, on a totally non-religious note, I really wish we had Julius Caesar's book on grammar. I mean, just saying, the minute you asked the question, I was like, wow, the text I really want is not the best.
Yeah,
it would be really interesting if Tacitus had been a more extensive ethnographer and had taken down some of the literature of some of the groups he mentions in his Germania.
Right.
Well, he never actually went to the German lands. I mean, he was working from other ethnographies and other histories. But yeah, I wish we had a complete corpus by Tacitus, or a complete corpus by Livy. Livy may have been writing predominantly about political things, about the founding of Rome and all of the various civil strife and conflicts, but he includes a lot of information about the use of religious ritual, particularly as a means of shoring up state policy, and it would be really interesting to have the complete corpus. But mostly I just like, you know, as far as Norse work goes, I just like something that was actually written by a human.
Yeah, well, you know, talking about this, I feel like we've lost so much, but it's so wonderful that there are those of us, and hopefully we will encourage more and more to be writing from today, because especially when you think of like Gaul or Germania or places to the east. You know, it's just like almost everything was lost.
Yeah.
And so much from the Celtic world or the Norse world. And then we've got these tantalizing names and little quotes often from the Greco-Roman world to really tempt us.
The oral cultures, when you go to the Norse at least, you were dealing with a body of lore that was passed predominantly via orality. I mean, they were oral cultures. And that's an important shift that happened. Peace to Venus, Weirus, Lupus, thank you for calling in. He hung up, but that was a good question.
Oh, I was hoping to get his answer.
Oh, what was it?
Oh,
he hung up.
I would like to know his answer, too.
Yeah, we'll have to pester him on his blog. So, are you working on any projects after the book, now that From the Prow of Myth is out?
I have a novel which I hope to get out next year. It's actually an old project, but it's been kind of brushed off and rejuvenated. I also hope next year to put out a book of essays, a lot of them drawn from Finn Kuhl's Mast and from various anthologies. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. We are almost out of time, actually. So is there anything else that we haven't covered that you would like to comment on, Michael? I don't want to cut you off, but we have about 5 minutes.
Well, one thing I just wanted to say, at least mention, was I think we're at a time where we have a lot of people trying to really limit what pagan is, with big-name bloggers that would cut out polytheists practically. And I just think as polytheists, this is something we should be really aware of.
Yeah. That is definitely a concern. And I don't understand. I don't understand why that is so threatening to them.
Or also you get this idea out there now that basically what's happening is we're reviving the Renaissance. And I'm like, hello? Yeah.
I may mean for a little earlier than the Renaissance, but...
Also, the problem is that when you put yourself at the center of your quote-unquote spirituality, I think it's very threatening to have somebody come and say, well, it's not about you. I think it attacks the sense of personhood.
No, I think you're right. I think that's a big part of it.
But you know what? It's not about us. It's about the gods, and the sooner we adjust our priorities, the better. See me being all diplomatic and shit?
So is there a poem you'd like to read to close?
Yes, we would love to have that.
Did you want me to read? You'd suggested an ancient poem.
An ancient one or one of yours? Either is fine with me.
Yes, please.
All right, I will read another one of mine then. Let me
read one of yours.
Book here.
The old one's been around for a while.
I'm flipping through here. I'm going to read one called Flower Anthology.
Cool.
I here arrange an anthology of flowers, of the flower changed like crocus, beloved of Hermes, transformed by the grieving trickster to precious saffron. After that fatal sporting accident. Or Nefertine, blue-skinned and luminous water lily gracing the lands of the Nile, his flute raised. Or Hyacinthus, muscular discus thrower of Sparta's disciplined youth brigade, beloved of Apollo and tragically felled by the blow of spurned Zephyrus, that jealous wind. Such the power of unrequited love, but each blooming hyacinth ever memorializes their Greek love. Handsome Adonis, I add, deified in Aphrodite's desire and Persephone's yearning, spiked by savage boar, his blood reddened a river of Lebanon, where bright anemones still spring from the crimson flow after winter's hard rains. I set here too, the pine and pomegranate crowned, panpipes playing Anatolian goat herd, Attis, round whom tore a whirlwind of passion of woman eunuch and goddess. He unmanned himself under a pine tree, and violets sprang from his blood. There are many of you received into the garden of immortality, a transgression of the regular ordering of things, this raising of mortals into the ranks of the lesser gods, like that exquisite youth Antinous, swept into heaven's currents and multiplied in the mirrors of art, and whose red lotus I place in the center.
Wow. That's amazing.
Folks, we've been speaking with Michael Rowdery, and his work can be found in his most recent book, From the Prow of Myths, as well as in the Bibliotheca Alexandrina anthologies, Written in Wine, Describing Ibis, and Out of Arcadia. He also maintains a blog at sidonchulsmast.wordpress.com. Next week, you will get to enjoy the Pagan Music Project, and then join Weird Ways Radio on November 20th, where we will be speaking with Ann Welch, and we'll be discussing bear cultists, as well as sacred smithing and metalwork. And next week, you have a very special treat for you as part of the Pagan Music Project. I've just been informed that their guest is going to be Kenny Klein, so y'all are not going to want to miss that. That's all for tonight. Now and always, may our gods be hailed, may our ancestors be venerated, and may our traditional ways be restored. Have a good night, folks.
The Common Book of Wicca and Witchcraft is envisioned as a copyright-free collection of spells, chants, rituals, and commentary dealing with Wicca and witchcraft in general, which people can draw upon whenever they like without having to worry about copyright, attribution, and the politics that sometimes accompany these things in our community. I think it's a wonderful idea. I certainly plan to contribute to it, and I hope that you'll join me in supporting it. You can learn more about the Common Book of Wicca and Witchcraft, as well as supporting the Indiegogo campaign for it, at the following address: witchlibrary.com. I hope you'll go and have a look at it, and I hope you'll join me in supporting it. And until next time, may your blessed be.
In Neolithic Shamanism by Raven Caldera and Galina Kraskova, 83 practical exercises build relationships with earth, sun, moon, plants, animals, water, fire, craft, air, and ancestors, while exploring the role of altered states in spirit work. Neolithic Shamanism is available at fine bookstores everywhere or at innertraditions.com.
Thank you for joining us on WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. You can hear us every night right here on Blog Talk Radio, or download us later on iTunes. Please check our schedule for accurate showtimes. For all questions, comments, or show suggestions, you can email us at pagans tonight@gmail.com. And let us know how we're doing. We'd love to hear from you. You can also visit us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on LiveJournal. We invite you to tune in again tomorrow night. Good night, and blessed be.